there's never a loss of material to talk about at Christmas time. And I was going through looking at some stuff, and I saw the conference or district sent out called the Redemption of Scrooge. And I thought it was an interesting topic, because sometimes we get all wrapped up in the commerce of Christmas. So we're going to take a look at that over the next 4 weeks. But before that, Father O'Malley was driving down the road one day in Boston on his way to a Christmas Eve party when he got stopped for speeding in the city of Medford. Highway patrol officer smelled alcohol on his breath and saw an empty wine bottle in the floor, and he said, "Father," he said, "have you been drinking?" "Only water," replied the father. The policeman asked, "Well, how come I smell wine?" The priest looked at the bottle and said, "Good Lord, he done it again." I thought it was pretty good. It's Christmas, and the consternation of what to buy and for whom to buy is the age-old question that we all face, and we all try to deal with it, and we all try to work through it. My brother has a wife, and they were here, and you met them, and between the two of them, they have 6 children and 5 grandchildren. And the question comes is, who to buy for and what to buy? Because if it was up to me, I wouldn't buy the whole family anything. And not that I'm Scrooge. It's just too many people. So Cindy and I have devised a plan. My brother's wife, who has 2 daughters, they're out of the house. They don't get anything. Well, one of them's back in the house. But we're still on the plan, and she's out of the house. Nor do we buy for her grandchildren. Now, we buy for my niece and nephew's children, because that's part of the plan. It's our plan. We can devise what we want. But the age-old question is, what do you do about your own family? God's economy is not often the same economy that the world has. And it's not necessarily the one that we embrace, and it's certainly not part of the economy that Scrooge had. So the question becomes, if Scrooge can be redeemed, can we all be redeemed? And how do I learn to love and share the values that God has if I'm a miser? So today we're going to set the tone and try to take a look at what's going to follow in this series and maybe get a better understanding of the values of the world. There's a video that I want you to take a look at first. And that's what we're going to be taking a look at, is living in God's economy and reaping whatever we sow. And we will at some point take a look at that parable of the reaper and the sower. But I'm always interested in projections people are going to spend. The initial estimate that Americans will spend in 2016 is an average of $781. I'm trying to figure out how to spend the $1. That's up last year from $704. The National Retail Federation expects retail sales in November and December, excluding autos, gas, and restaurants, to increase 3.6% to $655.8 billion. And if you've ever been in retail, and I worked for Sears when I was in college, and boy, they couldn't wait till November and December, because that's when they made the retail stores make the majority of their income. So maybe a good subtitle for this would be, is are we living in God's economy or are we living in our own economy? Advent's not about spending a lot of money. Anybody agree? It really isn't. And it's not about running up massive credit card debt that people will do and then take months and years to pay it off. It's not really what Advent's all about. I'm glad you're here, because what we want to do is talk about what it really is and take a look at Scrooge through the Christmas Carol and look at the redemption of Scrooge. We're also doing an Advent study on Thursday evenings. We've got some books outside there if you would like to join us, 7 o'clock. Scrooge becomes an iconic figure who represents greed, stinginess, and just generally being in a terrible mood. Got any friends or family like that that, you know, you might call them Ebenezer year-round? We all do. I talk about my brother a lot. If there's one cloud in the sky, it's going to rain on him. And as I told you, there's one cloud in the sky, it's going to rain on him. It's not going to rain on me. But I don't understand that idea and whole concept of being in a terrible mood. I don't get it. Galatians 6:7 says, "Do not be deceived. God is not mocked." In other words, he will not allow himself to be ridiculed nor treated with contempt, nor allow his precepts to be scornfully set aside. For whatever a man sows, this and only this is what he will reap. Charles Dickens published the Christmas Carol back in England, or in London, in 1843, and it immediately became one of the most successful novels there ever was, commonly called A Christmas Carol. And what he tells is the story of a bitter old buzzard or old miser named Ebenezer Scrooge, and you've read the story, but he also about his transformation into a gentler, nicer person. But it only comes after he's been visited by Jacob Marley, and when Marley comes back as the ghost of Christmas past. So he sees the ghost of Christmas past, he sees the ghost of Christmas, and he sees the ghost of Christmas yet to come throughout this. And somebody, in reading this week, somebody asked Dickens, said, "Where did you come up with this whole idea?" And he said that it came from the humiliating experiences of his own childhood, his sympathy for the poor, and various stories and different tales that he had read. And he goes on to say that he was keenly touched, and his heart was touched by the poor children in the middle decades of the 19th century that didn't have anything. And he goes on to say in early 1843, he toured the Cornish tin mines and saw how kids were being overworked and the conditions they were working in. And then he went to a Field Lane Ragged School, it was called, in one of the many schools in London that was set up to take care of poor kids and to take care of those that didn't have anything. And so when we look at God's economy, it didn't fit the economy that Dickens saw. And it didn't meet that lifestyle. So the tale begins in a cold, bleak, biting Christmas Eve in London, 7 years after the death of his business partner and his good buddy, another Scrooge, Jacob Marley. And one night at home, Scrooge is visited by the ghost of Christmas past, and he's visited by Marley. And he sees this apparition, and he's not sure really what it is. But Marley's face had a dismal light about it, like a bad lobster in a dark cellar. Marley has a bandage under his chin, tied at the top of its head. How much greater was his horror when the phantom, taking off the bandage round his head as if it were too warm to wear indoors, and then its lower jaw dropped down upon its breast. And so what Marley does is he talks to Scrooge and he tells him that he has a chance to avoid the same thing that he did. In other words, Jacob says, Ebenezer, you don't want to do what I did. You've got a chance. You've got a chance. You've got time to be redeemed. And it sounds a lot like the story that Chip read earlier about the rich man and Lazarus, and this rich man being a shrewd manager, and he becomes the main character in this parable. John Wesley once preached a sermon on money, and he said in that sermon, he said, gain all you can, save all you can, and give all you can. And when we look at this idea of sowing and reaping, and we said on Thursday evening that it's not just about money that we sow, but we sow our lifestyle, we sow in relationships, we sow in kind words, we do sow in giving. I'm not going to say we don't, but that's the way it is. Verses 16 to 18, Jesus was teaching about this new age had begun. He says, the law and the writings of the prophets were proclaimed until John. Since then, the gospel of the kingdom has been and continues to be preached, and everyone tries forcefully to go into it. Yet it is easier for heaven and earth to pass away than for a single stroke of a letter of the law to fail and become void. In other words, if you can't live up to the 600 plus laws of the Old Testament, then you ain't going to make it. That's really what he's saying. Because it's easier for heaven and earth to pass away than it is to keep all those laws. And so the comparison is staggering when we look at these two men. We look at the rich man, dressed in his tailored suits, living in his mansion that he did, wearing his Cole Haan shoes, going to the precinct for dinner, eating $50, $60, $70, $80 meals, living in the best of homes, seeing the best of entertainment, compared to what Chip read of Lazarus lying by the gate with leprosy, and it was so bad the dogs licked his sores. And that's pretty gruesome. But those are the two people. And after they die, guess what? Their roles are reversed. The rich man no longer is rich. And Lazarus is as rich as the rich man could have ever been. Except, had that rich man accepted Jesus. But Jesus told him, he said, you had your riches on earth. Now Lazarus has his. And the rich man realized that it was so bad. That also kind of talks about life immediately after death, if you really stop and think about it. You know, we got all these ideas of, and I'm not being critical. Don't walk out here and say, he said this is wrong. But we got all, well, you can, but it's not what I mean. but we got all these ideas about purgatory and people when they die, the spirit goes somewhere, soul goes somewhere, and the body's still in the grave. But that doesn't support that, nor does what, what Jesus said to the thief on the cross. That today you'll be with me in paradise. In other words, today, not tomorrow, not at the end of purgatory, but now. And that's what he's trying to say, and I think that's what the whole message of the Advent season is all about. It's an opportunity for us to look at ourselves and to reflect and to realize really who the person of Jesus is and what that personhood really is. Some of the things that I looked at, and one of the things that I was reading this week, it said, redeeming Advent traditions. And I'm thinking, what in the world does that mean? Well, one of the things is, what does Advent really mean to us individually? What, when we talk about that, what are our thoughts of the Advent season? And what does it mean to us? And when I sit and I reflect back, and we talked about looking at the past, the present, and the future Thursday night, and what do these thoughts evoke in a person's life? And I think Psalm 77 really wraps it up very well, because it says, remember the deeds of the Lord. And that's really what the Advent season is all about. In Jesus, God has come down in person. He's come down as Emmanuel. He's come down as a baby in a manger, as Sandy talked about. And we try to glorify all of that. And like she said, a manger is nothing more than a feeding trough. And probably there's hay left over from what a cow didn't eat. But that's what Advent is all about. It's the true meaning of the Exodus out of Egypt. The true meaning of redemption. It's intended to point us toward Christ and point us forward as we go that way. An opportunity to liberate our souls, to liberate the sin that we had in our lives. The opportunity to share. Jesus said, or excuse me, God said, I have come down to Moses, and God was indeed present with his people. He was with them, and he led them by a pillar of smoke and a cloud, and he directed them, and he had the leaders there and the priests to teach right and to teach wrong. And so what we really need to do as we look at this second Sunday of Advent is we need to carve out some time for Jesus during this season. And I was serious when I asked, in my prayer, that we get a grasp of what evangelism really is. We've got parties to attend, cards to send, presents to buy, relatives to visit, some you don't want to, meals to prepare. Tom and I were out this weekend ringing bells for the Salvation Army and collecting money. And it's interesting when you see people's faces, and Tom will, I'm sure, can see this, but you'll be seeing people come in. I was at the Kroger store, I think Tom was too, but you see people come in and they look the other way. Like, I'm here begging. Next time I'm going to wear my jeans with holes in them. So I look like some of the regular bell ringers. But you see people, and you can tell when you look in their eye, are they going to drop a dollar in the bucket, or are they not? And you can see people come out of the store, and you think they probably don't have 20 cents in their pocket, and they'll drop the 20 cents in the bucket. And you'll see the person come out of there in the finely tailored suit with the Cole Haan shoes and walk right by and look the other way. Now, that's not a plea to give to the Salvation Army. That's just a plea to tell you that's how people are. And they've missed the whole idea of what Advent really is. It's easy to squeeze Jesus out of our lives. But it's my hope that as we look toward Advent of 2016, it's an opportunity that we squeeze him back in. Someone said, and I read and said, it's so ironic, Jesus really gets invited to his own birthday party. And even when he's invited, he spends much of his time being ignored. That was interesting. So why not find some time in December to remember Jesus? Psalm 77 verse 12 says, and maybe, just maybe, this will change your perspective on life. Maybe you will see God in a new way. Maybe you will see your life in a new way. worked for the psalmist. Maybe it'll work for us.